Terry Cassidy, Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio, and we are very happy to be here tonight, Wednesday night, and we are going to be talking to Matthew Stein. His bio, you can go to the front page of Camelot and scroll down to the radio icons, and you'll see a link there for his bio if you happen to be listening and don't know anything about him. He's written two books. I believe one is called When Technology Fails, and the other is called When Disaster Strikes, if I have that name right. And as I say, his bio is on Camelot. So, Matthew, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, great. Great to hear your voice, and I'm glad that we are live and able to conduct this this interview sort of, even though I've done an interview recently with you when I attended your workshop, obviously that's going to be an editing job, and so we need to put that out as soon as we can, but this gives people a sort of a heads up, and I guess most of what you talk about is so intricate, actually, that in the end that we can go over it from many different directions, and I'm sure that people will have a lot to ask you about during the show. So we do allow for call-ins, and we also have a chat room along with the show, and that link is on the front page of Project Camelot as well. And so even and yourself could also go to the chat room if you'd like. All you do is click on the link and then put in, make up some name, use your name, whatever you'd like to do, and people can chat with you. And what we like people to do is ask questions and type them in all caps in the chat during the show, and then if we can, we go back around the second hour and the last half hour. We concentrate on the questions, but prior to that, it would just be sort of more or less between you and I. So what I'd like to do here is just get you to talk a little bit about your bio yourself from your own perspective, and if you can kind of go back, because I could read it here, and I should just go over it really briefly for people, saying that you're an environmentalist, a best-selling author, you're MIT-trained as an engineer, and what you call a green builder. You're a speaker and a visionary thinker, and you're dedicated to helping people wake up and unite for the shift, time of the shift, and in the event of a collapse or actually moving into a global renaissance. So you really sort of prepare people with emergency prep, self-reliance, survival, and this sort of thing. You've got a lot to say about possible nuclear meltdown worldwide, and we can go into all that and perhaps a bit of how to deal with that, and then certain things having to do with climate change, etc. And if you wanted to go into other areas, feel free. This is a pretty loose situation, this radio show, and so just consider it kind of an even more sort of loose situation than the interview itself, where we really covered a lot of nuts and bolts in that interview. But it's not out yet, so if you could give yourself an introduction.
Sure. So I grew up in Vermont, and my parents started me on skis when I was like three, walking around and in the backcountry. So basically, going up lifts, going in the backcountry from 5, 6, 7 years old, hunting and fishing as a little kid. I graduated to extreme skiing and rock climbing when I was like 12 years old. I started doing that stuff and ended up at MIT out of high school from Burlington, Vermont. Went to MIT, just public school kid, wasn't a rich kid. And people often say, well, what is an MIT-trained engineer doing writing a book like When Technology Fails? And so perhaps because you are Project Camelot, I'll go into some of my more interesting and different bio that I don't usually talk about with people. Well, back in the summer of 1977, I interviewed for a summer job while at MIT, in the student employment office for a job in Santa Cruz. And In fact, I was so sure I'd botched the interview that I went out and made other plans for that summer. But I ended up a month or so later getting a letter in the mail saying, congratulations, you have a job as an engineering intern at Plantronics in Santa Cruz. And I had some pretty cool plans set up for the summer, but, you know, my friend said, come on, Yosemite Valley, California, you got to be kidding. You got to go for it. You know, cancel your plans in the East Coast and go to the West Coast. So I agreed and went there. Well, midsummer, or kind of late in the summer, I'm walking down the Pacific Garden Mall in Santa Cruz, and there's a little local entertainment rag called the Good Times, and I picked it up, and I turned, just opened the magazine, and it opened right to an article about a very powerful 108-year-old Indian saint that happened to be hanging out for a while in Santa Cruz, and it mentioned that people had phenomenal spiritual experiences and miraculous healings, you know, cancers and all kinds of things go away. And my fingers started vibrating. And, you know, I realized I'm a junior at MIT, I mean, just before my senior year, very scientifically trained. And my girlfriend that a couple months earlier had wanted to have a conversation with me about past lives. And I think my tolerance for that conversation was about 5 minutes maximum. I kind of thought, well, maybe yes, maybe no. But, you know, it didn't really seem to matter to me, seemed to have no bearing on my life. So I pick up this article about a 108-year-old saint, and my fingers start vibrating like electricity's going through them. So I ended up, you know, my heart's kind of pounding, and something in me says, well, you know, you really need to see this guy. So I went to, like, three group meditations they were offering, and he'd chant, and I kind of zone out. And I'd done a little meditation before that and through a program called Silva Mind Control, and so I'd experienced thoughtless meditative states, so it wasn't that unusual. But he mentioned that on the Saturday, he was giving something called Shaktipat, which is, he called it like a transference of energy from the guru to the disciple. And he described it as like buying you a car, filling it up with gas, and teaching you how to drive, and whether you did, you know, wrecked it or what you did with it was up to you. And I just knew that, you know, I wanted to see if there was something to this. You hear stories about powerful yogis and spiritual masters, and, you know, growing up in Burlington, Vermont, it's not like I had much of an opportunity to see these kinds of guys. And I thought, well, you know, this is your opportunity to see if there's anything to it or if it's just a bunch of baloney. So I went for the Shaktipat on Saturday, entered in a room, in a big carpeted room, and with about 60 other people. And there's a little ceremony, gave them a gift of flowers and fruit, and, you know, they suggested a $30 gift, but this is no Rajneesh driving around in Rolls Royces. I mean, all of his possessions fit in a couple knapsacks, and, you know, lots of money came his way, and it all went to famine relief and orphanages for children and, you know, things like that. So he came down and put a flower on my head and tapped me on the top of my head, and all of a sudden it felt like there was a million volts flowing into me, and I was blinded with brilliant light, even though my eyes were closed, and my body started doing yoga I didn't know how to do, and pranayama, and things I could look up in books later on and say, like, oh, I was doing this and I was doing that, but I'd never had instruction in that stuff before. And it was a pretty mind-blowing experience, and I remember a lot of it I don't really remember very well. And at one point, though, I remember floating in this kind of golden light off in the universe, and all of a sudden it felt like this intense sound and energy in me, I felt like I was going to explode and spread my guts all around the room, and I just couldn't take it anymore. In fact, I had that conscious thought of, like, I just don't know if I can stand this anymore. This ties into why I wrote When Technology Fails, just kind of, you're getting a long version here, sort of the interesting version.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that, too.
So when I opened my, all of a sudden after I had this thought, like, I just don't think I can stand it anymore. Like, I think I'm going to die. I mean, the energy flowing through me felt like it was going to burn me into a crisp or blow me into a million pieces or something. And then all of a sudden it stopped, and I opened my eyes, and I just laughed for about 20 minutes. I just couldn't believe it. And I looked around me, and there was two people having a quiet conversation in the corner of the room. And other than that, the room was, like, totally empty. And I thought, well, where'd everyone go? Well, when I'd seen the group meditations, I'd typically seen two or three space cookies kind of out drooling fools on the floor out in samadhi, and I understand from reading your bio, you know what samadhi means. And then, you know, the yogi would come down if they had to vacate the room and kind of massage their eyeballs and tap their hand and call their name, and eventually they'd come back to conscious awareness and they could get up and leave the room. Well, I was one of those drooling fools on the floor for about an hour, hour and a half after everyone else came back and gone off in the universe. So fast forward 20 years, and I've had quite a number of spiritual experiences and one bona fide vision. The next vision happened, I won't go into that tonight, you know, unless there's time later, happened in 1979 as a junior engineer at Hewlett-Packard, fresh out of MIT. But fast forward again to 1997, roughly Thanksgiving. At that point in time, I now have had a 20-year practice of mostly daily prayer and meditation, started from the yogi in 1977 in the initiation. And I've since become a Christian, though more like a Gnostic Christian. I don't really belong to a particular church, but feel very connected to the Christ. And that's another long story that I think I'll avoid right now, unless you want to go into it later. So 1997, here I am, my morning session of prayer and meditation, and I made a generic request for guidance and inspiration. And sometimes I wish I'd never asked. And you know, if you've ever seen that movie... Labyrinth with David Bowie, and there's, you know, the gremlins are waiting around for this girl to ask the Goblin Kings to take her little brother away, and it's like, did he say it? And then finally when she says it, then they're all like, oh boy, he said it. Well, I think that there were some dudes on the other side who were just waiting for me to ask the question for guidance and inspiration. You know, it's a free will universe. It's like, oh, he said it, he asked for it, here it comes. So all of a sudden, I'm sitting there meditating, just to ask for guidance and inspiration, and I received this vision. And instantaneously, I get a three-dimensional holographic storyboard pictorial outline dumped into my head instantaneously, outlining this massive book project, which became my book, When Technology Fails. And it was a project to both help people live more sustainably on the planet, more self-reliantly on the planet, and help them to both plan for and then cope with and deal with vast failures in the infrastructure on the planet. And so this is 1997 Thanksgiving, roughly, give or take a couple days. And at that point in time, .com is booming, business is booming, building is booming, oil's at about a 30-year low when you factored in inflation. And, you know, on the outside, it certainly looked like... everything was peachy keen in the United States and in the world. And, you know, the second intifada hadn't even really started in Israel yet. So, you know, things are looking pretty smooth and easy on the surface. And I get this semi-apocalyptic project dropped in my lap. Well, my first thought is, like, no effing way. I don't know how to do this. You know, I mean, I don't know all this stuff. This massive project, it outlines all these areas, and some of them are within my area of expertise, but certainly not all of them. And I thought, you know, I don't know all this stuff, and I'm an engineer, not an author, and I don't know if I can do this. And, you know, Jesus calls it the still small voice. The little voice in my head said, well, nobody knows it all. And it assured me that I had the skills and talents that if I chose to take on the assignment, and it never felt like my idea, it always felt like my assignment, that I'd receive the inner and outer help that I needed to finish it off. And I didn't just jump right up and say, well, God talked to me today, and I'm going to write this cool book to help mankind deal with these coming times of tribulation and turmoil and tumult. It took me about a year to decide maybe it was a good idea and I could actually do it. I dug up the editor of the Whole Earth Catalog, Howard Rheingold, who took over from Stuart Brand, and he thought it was a great idea. And my friend Rick Sylvester, an extreme skier, stuntman for Bond films and climber, had been my climbing partner for a couple decades, and he wrote articles for Outside Magazine and Penthouse and other magazines, and he thought it was a great idea. And Eric Perlman, a documentary filmmaker of mine, another extreme kind of outdoors guy, gave me some tips in writing a proposal, and I ended up spending the next year number two, reading 30, 40 books and writing a 200-page proposal in sample chapters. And then I found a small publisher who gave me a modest advance and didn't even cover two-thirds of my expenses, much less a year's lost wages. And then year number three, once I had a firm commitment, I racked up the credit cards and borrowed on my house and worked 70 hours a week and made the book happen. So that's why an engineer from MIT ended up writing a book called When Technology Fails. And it's quite well described by the subtitle, which says A Manual for Self-Reliance, Sustainability, and surviving the long emergency.
So, right. Well, at this point, let's kind of make a bit of a left turn, because
sure.
I'd like you to talk about I forget what you call it, 400 nuclear Chernobyl. Power plants or something like that?
400 Chernobyls.
Okay. So can you go down that road a bit, because to set the scene for what it is that you're kind of proposing and how you see the future?
Well, this is one possible future. I mean, sometimes people say, well, Matt, you know, you got this vision, obviously from a higher source and higher power, because a term paper was a major ordeal for me, and certainly figuring out my massive book, like that's like 30 term papers in one, is a little far beyond my normal mental capacity. So I'm not, people say, well, what have you seen? And I say, well, God, a friend of mine, military guy, says God works on the need to know basis. So I haven't been shown what is exactly is going to happen. But I was shown that people are going to need this information, told many millions of people would be needing this information to help them deal with and cope with what's coming down the pipeline. So I've written two extremely viral articles about possible futures and meltdowns in society. The first is called The Perfect Storm, Six Trends Converging on Collapse. And I wrote that 2 or 3 years ago, and it went quite viral on the Internet. And the most recent one that I wrote earlier this year was called 400 Chernobyls. And that's about a very likely, very, very likely, very probable event. So it sounds like we've got a break coming up, and we'll get into that after the break.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Anxiety on a daily basis? Do you struggle to complete tasks, feel nervous in social settings, or are you losing sleep because of anxiety, worry, or health concerns? Let me tell you about a breakthrough discovery that changed my life. My name is Kirsten, and anxiety plagued me daily. I listened to the wonderful testimonials about RNA drops and decided to use them myself, beginning gradually from just a few drops to the recommended dosage. I'm happy to report that I experienced a significant decrease of anxiety, and that was just the beginning. After you hear the incredible stories at GetMyRNA.com, you can get a free trial-sized bottle valued at $50. Just pay shipping and handling. Again, that's GetMyRNA.com for your free trial-sized bottle today. Nothing is as important as feeling good again. Supplies are limited, so visit GetMyRNA.com right now.
Or see our ad on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. RNA drops.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models, a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the BlueShield banner. BlueShield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. I'll give you an example of that. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. The government doesn't lie and engages in disinformation. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal it. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Your frequency is ascending with Strange Universe Radio, the most popular internet program in the galaxy. Weeknight, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time with your host, Sean David Morton.
Author of When Technology Fails and also When Disaster Strikes. He is a graduate of MIT and an engineer, and has quite a background also in terms of, I guess you might say, sports, but of the, I forget what they call outdoor sports. I guess that's what they call them. Anyway, so that's what's going on here. And Matthew, you were talking about, well, right before the break, we were about to go into the Chernobyls, 400 Chernobyls kind of concept, right?
Right. So shortly before Fukushima melted down, 3 days before Fukushima melted down, I finished the last chapter of my new book, When Disaster Strikes, which is called The Unthinkable: Surviving a Nuclear Catastrophe. And 2 weeks before that, I finished a chapter on solar storms and EMP. And so when Fukushima blew its top and started spilling radioactivity all over the place, I got on a bunch of shows, and on one of the shows I was talking about the inevitability of long-term grid collapse from either an electromagnetic pulse, meaning like some badass country decides to throw a nuclear weapon at the United States to mess up the electronics in our country, and or a natural event from the sun, which is guaranteed to happen. It's just not a question of if it'll happen, but a question of when, and how either of these scenarios would result in very long-term grid collapse over large sections of the United States. Then I was talking about the Fukushima incident and how the official line was that it wasn't the earthquake that directly damaged the reactors that caused them to melt down, but the fact that when a nuclear reactor, when the grid goes down locally, a nuclear reactor is designed to automatically disconnect from the grid and go into emergency shutdown mode, where the reactor's control rods, gravity by gravity, drop down in between the fuel rods to start slowing the reaction down. Now, people think, like, oh, you know, you can just turn off a nuclear reactor like flipping a switch, and that's, like, not the way it works at all. In fact, according to Arne Gundersen, 8 months after Fukushima melted down, even though those reactors had been in emergency shutdown mode for 8 months, if they were to lose cooling for 38 hours, they would start melting down again. So after a reactor's been shut down for 8 months, it only has to lose cooling for 38 hours to melt down. Now, when a reactor's like really hot and really running, like Three Mile Island or Fukushima when the earthquake happened, Three Mile Island had a partial core meltdown from 15 minutes of coolant failure. And it's estimated that somewhere between 15 minutes and an hour, you had full reactor meltdown in Fukushima. So what happened in Fukushima is the earthquake took down the grid. The grid stopped providing power to the, you know, to the reactor. Now, people say, well, can't reactors, like, power themselves to keep themselves cool? Well, that's kind of like trying to take a sip of water out of a fire hose. You'll blast your face off. The reactors are putting out so much heat and so much energy and so much power that they need to dump that power somewhere, and they need a grid to dump it into. So when the grid goes down and they disconnect, they go into shutdown mode, but they're still extremely hot radioactively and temperature-wise inside that core. It doesn't just instantly shut off. So the massive pumps that pump millions of gallons a day of water through those reactors to keep them cool must keep running, or the reactors burn themselves up. So 20 minutes after they go into emergency shutdown mode and the pumps have kicked in, then the tsunami comes along and wipes out the backup generators and the backup battery packs. And 15 minutes later, they start melting down. And a couple hours later, they get so hot that the superheated water inside the reactor core starts dissociating the water into oxygen and hydrogen. These two gases bubble up and boil up into the top of the 6-foot-thick concrete and steel-reinforced containment domes and recombine in an explosive manner and blow the containment domes and crack the vessels. So here, this 6-foot-thick steel and concrete that's supposed to hold all that nasty stuff inside in the event of a failure, well, you know, those engineers were smart guys, but obviously we didn't make them fail safe like we thought they did, and they failed. So you have 2 out of 6 reactors have failed critically. 2 out of 6 reactors had no fuel rods in them. They were unloaded. See, this fuel doesn't last forever. After somewhere between a year or two, the fuel has lost enough power and radioactivity that it's not as efficient anymore. So they take those, quote, spent fuel rods out, which are still incredibly hot, and they dip a giant crane in there with mechanical linkages because they're so radioactive that they'll fry electronics that's anywhere near it. And then they pull those core rods out and load them in a big giant bucket, and the crane lifts them up encased in a bucket of water because they're so radioactive they'd kill people in radiation suits if you were anywhere near them without the shielding of water and steel. And then this big industrial crane moves along like 100 yards over or 50 yards over, and it takes this big bucket with hot radioactive cores in them, and it unloads them into what's called a spent fuel pond. So after a couple hours, the reactor core blows its top, you know, blows the vessel, and then more of that hydrogen and oxygen starts floating inside the building. And then we all saw those pictures of the building having explosions and blowing its top. So all that equipment that's designed to unload the reactor cores gets blown to pieces on reactor 3 and reactor 4. And here you have these fuel ponds that have 10 Chernobyls worth of radioactive material in each of them. And they're sitting on top of buildings that have now had multiple hydrogen explosions and are basically look like they're on their last legs. And all of that expensive machinery designed to handle and manipulate and maneuver these rods is now a bunch of twisted steel thrown into the fuel ponds all around them. And so not only do you have the reactor cores having melted down and blown the reactor vessel, now you have on top of the building in the upper floor, you have the spent fuel ponds with 10 Chernobyls worth. There's like 1 Chernobyl's worth in the core. But here's this pond that doesn't even have a concrete and steel enclosure around it like the reactor cores do. and they get 10 Chernobyls worth of rods in there, and they're a bunch of twisted steel and metal, and so that's really my big concern. So unfortunately, we're actually talking more like 4,000 Chernobyls, not 400. But the reason it got 400 Chernobyls is that worldwide we have 442 nuclear reactors. And in the event of an extreme geomagnetic solar storm, which we've had two in the last 150 years, we've had about 100 very strong solar storms in the last 150 years. In other words, when you have one of these, it's when the sun has a kind of like a big burp. It's like called a coronal mass ejection. And the sun launches out this mass of hot charged plasma, like sun stuff, that's flying out in space at over a million miles an hour, far faster than our rockets can fly. And on occasion, it heads towards Earth. And when it hits Earth, it interacts with the upper atmosphere, and you get this incredible light show, northern lights and southern lights, aurora borealis, and the sky lights up all kinds of colors, and it disrupts communications. And, you know, like in last spring, we had really beautiful northern lights and nice pictures, and they had to reroute some planes over the North Pole. But other than some, modest communication problems and some great pictures, it's no big deal. Well, back in 1989, we had a storm probably 10 times stronger than the one we had last spring, and what it did was it induced a voltage and a spike of thousands and thousands of volts and amps in power lines in Canada, and it fried a Canadian power transformer, and it fried one in the East Coast, and it fried one in the UK, and they managed to keep the UK's power going and the United States power going, though Canada lost power to 9 million people for 6 hours and, you know, a few hundred thousand people for a couple of days, but no big deal. Well, in 2003, you know, people say, well, okay, so what if you lose a transformer or two? You know, you go to the hardware store and you buy them. Well, it turns out that these things are tens of millions of dollars a piece. They're 300 tons each. You have to shut down a freeway to deliver one. And there's a three-year waiting list to make a single one, and they're all custom-made and custom-built per installation. So turns out we had the extreme geomagnetic storm in 1929, roughly 10 times stronger than the storm that fried three of these major transformers in the Northern Hemisphere in 1989. So back in the late 2010 or so, the U.S. government got pretty concerned that our grid might be very vulnerable to space events like this, and also very vulnerable to terrorist attack with an electromagnetic pulse if some country decided to blow a nuclear weapon above the surface of the Earth. So they hired Meditech Corporation, and they teamed up the Oak Ridge National Labs, as some of the smartest guys in the world, a bunch of nuclear physicists, PhDs. They teamed up Oak Ridge National Labs. They had Sandia National Labs overseeing it, and they had Meditech doing the computer modeling, advanced computer modeling of the United States grid. Well, what they found was that in an event like the 1929 event, which they estimate was 50% weaker than the 1859 Carrington event, that both of those geomagnetic storms, an average of 75 years apart, 90 years to the last one and 60 years before that to the one before that. So basically, and looking at ice core samplings, we're looking at events like this happening every 75 to 100 years. So however you look at it, we're either basically due or overdue for another event like this. So they said, okay, what's going to happen? Well, they found that they estimated 365 of these massive transformers would fry in North America and roughly 2,000 worldwide. Well, that's like a 20 years at today's current manufacturing capacity in the world. If the world was working fine and nothing was fried, it would take 20 years for us to make that many transformers that would fry in a single day or two in an extreme geomagnetic event that we've had twice in the last 150 years. Now, the last time it happened, 1921, it was kind of no big deal. The sky lit up from the North Pole down to Hawaii and Puerto Rico, and from the South Pole all the way north to American Samoa. And, you know, it burned down Penn Central Station from the induced currents. And in 1859, when it happened, it burned down a bunch of telegraph stations, and people found they could disconnect their batteries from telegraphs, and there was so much induced current floating around on these wires that they could send telegraphs around the world without any batteries or anything. And it was an incredible light show for a week-long light show in 1859 because there was two coronal mass events that happened. One started the Earth's upper magnetosphere really rolling for a couple of days, and 2 days later a second CME hit and kind of spiked it up again, another big spike, and it lasted another 5 days, total of 7 days. The lights were lit up like people would never seen before in northern and southern hemisphere. So if you got 365 of these, 2,000 of these go down in the world, then basically the way we have our grid going today, it's pretty much game over for the world as we know it. Doesn't mean that it's game over for civilization, for life on Earth, but it might be. But certainly the way the world, if and when it gets back on its feet again, isn't going to look at all like it does right now. And I'll tell you why.
Okay, let me ask you a couple things, though, in the midst of all this. You know, I know, for example, Ed Dames, I don't know if you know who he is, the remote viewer.
I know who he is. Yeah.
Okay, and he's sending out his newsletter lately, basically kind of all of a sudden after quite a, I think, a time of silence, is back sort of pushing this, what he calls kill shot from the sun scenario. And in many ways, what you're talking about is similar, is it not?
It is. It's not necessarily a kill shot in terms of directly killing people. I mean, it's certainly possible if we had this, like, incredible CME, like, 100 times more powerful than the 1859 event, that it could just actually fry people on the planet. But it's more likely, and quite likely, that we'll have a CME that will fry the grid, because it may not affect people directly. Now, I have not done remote viewing. I haven't been shown a vision of this. But I do know that I was obsessively compulsed with writing 400 Chernobyls, and that as I read and read and read and downloaded more and more government documents and scientific documents, I found that my initial fears were confirmed and that it was actually far worse than I had imagined and not better. I kept hoping that I had overestimated the danger and overestimated what was going to happen, and it turned out I'd actually underestimated. It's more like 4,000 Chernobyls.
And did you, by chance, I can't remember whether you answered this question before, but had you heard my interview with Jim Stone?
No, I haven't.
He's the NSA whistleblower. Okay, he's the NSA whistleblower who basically kind of blew the whistle on Stuxnet and Fukushima and what's going on over there. And if you don't know anything about Jim Stone, first of all, I highly recommend my live stream with him, and I can get the link over to you. But the second thing is that, and I also did a radio interview with him, but on top of it, his website does contain a lot of that information, and I think that you could find that especially interesting. We'll be right back after this break.
Are chemtrail geoengineering programs changing our weather and destroying our environment? Why in the world are they spraying?
They want to create a storm in the southeast, then they'll start engineering out over the North Pacific. That's where the trailies will be.
Find out why critics are calling Why in the World Are They Spraying the most important film that is revolutionizing the environmental movement. Go to whyintheworldaretheyspraying.com for more information.
It's just going to get worse until the point where we're not going to be able to grow anything at all unless it's a Monsanto genetically modified abiotic stress resistant seed.
Why in the World Are They Spraying? New international version with languages available from around the world. Go to whyintheworldaretheyspraying.com for more information.
It's all about money, and weather is another form of commoditizing, a way the Central Command Group can commoditize another form of our life.
Why in the world are they spraying?
And if you control the weather, you're going to control the planet. It's that simple.
What would you do if you or someone that you love was faced with a life-threatening illness? My name is Matthew David Hurtado, co-host of Transcension Radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. In 2008, I lost everything because of chronic illness, my home, a bankruptcy, even my marriage. A miracle happened in 2009. I discovered Ion and I was introduced to the RNA drops. Within a few short months, the nightmare of chronic fatigue, Lyme disease, and PTSD was a faded memory. Today, people all over the world have reported incredible testimonials about their transcendence process, and I invite you to listen and join us live on air every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Transcension airs live. You can listen to the archives or tell someone that you love, maybe even the person sitting in your chair right now, that science fiction has become virtual reality at Transcension Radio. Take your power back and join us every Saturday at Transcension Radio.
Nicotine, alcohol, good drugs. Coincidentally, tax drugs. Ooh, how does this work? Thank God they're taxing alcohol, man. It means we got those good roads we can drive on. Because I'll tell you something, I'll be honest, man. If I were going to legalize a drug, it sure wouldn't have been alcohol. Sorry, there's better drugs and better drugs for you. That's a fact. Pot is a better drug than alcohol. Fact. Fact. Stop your internal dialogue. But Bill, alcohol's... Shut up! You're wrong. Get over it. I'll prove it to you, man. You're at a ball game or a concert and someone's really violent and aggressive and obnoxious. Are they drunk or are they smoking pot? They're drunk. I have never seen people on pot get in a fight because it is impossible. Hey, buddy. Hey, what? Hey, hey. End of argument.
My name is Sean David Morton, and in 2010, I was called into the offices of the most high-powered law firm in the world on an estate matter of the utmost importance. After signing contracts promising I'd never reveal the identity of the people involved, I inherited the journals of a man that had spent 40 years in and become director of the global shadow government. It was the Holy Grail with information on the Unified Field Theory, the Roswell crash, the Philadelphia Experiment, the Sigma Treaty, Nazi superscience, the Montauk Project, Area 51, the Dulce Mesa Wars, and treaties with extraterrestrial races and the back engineering of their hardware. But mostly, it had to do with the development of technology that would allow us to travel through time and fight a deadly alien threat that was only now on its way here to destroy our world. Read the book that I have risked my life to write. For the first time ever, read the truth about it all. Sands of Time, the runaway bestseller by Sean David Morton, available in signed limited edition hardback only at StrangeUniverseRadio.com.
Read this book and never be the same.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
Practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christopher Green. Make sure to tune in to Green Wave Radio every Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. Central on American Freedom Radio. Hard-hitting and in-your-face, America.
Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio, and we're talking to Max Stein. And Matt, right before the break, we were sort of talking about Jim Stone, and I was recommending that you also take a look at his website because he is dealing with Fukushima and he's dealing with the reality of a lot of the things you're talking about actually happening over there. We also have, I have to say, I have some back-channel information that and it's not happy information, but the bottom line is that Japan is going to become unlivable and that those populations are going to be evacuated eventually to places. First of all, I think they're trying to buy two islands off the coast of Russia right now. I think they call them Kamchatka Islands. And,
yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, and also they will be obviously, evacuating populations to the U.S. as well as to China. In fact, it's said that the ghost cities in China may actually house some of these populations from Japan eventually as a result of what has gone on. Well, what I'd like you to talk about, though, is now if we fast forward to this, the circumstances that we have here in the United States, for one thing, and in other places around the world, what the situation is with regard to the power plants, because regardless of the kind of earth change, it appears that power plants are especially vulnerable regardless. I mean, you're talking about CMEs, you're talking about electromagnetic pulse events, but there's other things as well as, you know, earthquakes, tsunamis, these sorts of things, volcanic eruptions that could also disturb these power plants, correct?
Sure. Oh, yeah. You know, we came very close last year to having a Fukushima-like event in the United States when the Mississippi flooded, and they were using sandbags to keep the Mississippi out of the control room at a nuclear power plant, and I think it was Nebraska. You know, the flood waters are right up to the control room, and you know, they were, I mean, imagine that. You know, I don't think the control room would do very well with a million gallons of water floating through that electronics. And so just like the tsunami wiped it out in Japan, we almost had it wiped out there, and I think we have at least a dozen nuclear power plants around the New Madrid Fault that will probably, at least a certain percentage of them, will probably see Fukushima-like event in the event that that we have a major slip of the New Madrid Fault. So we have multiple scenarios, and the EMP and solar storm is like the worst, but there are certainly other scenarios that can cause problems on a huge scale, Fukushima-like scale, though, you know, EMP and solar storm is way, way worse potentially than Fukushima.
Well, in terms of the Fukushima that we're hearing, I don't know if you heard this sort of big deal that was made around the internet recently, but because somebody came forward and they're saying it's a hoax, that they were saying there was a fire at one of the plants and that it was about to sort of burn through, I guess. I'm not sure exactly. I posted an article there, but I did note it was unconfirmed, and sure enough, it turned out apparently to be a hoax. However, there's no doubt that the situation is escalating and sort of mounting over there. Isn't that right?
Well, there's no doubt that it's not getting better, put it that way, and that it's a 5 to 10 year plan to first of all, it's an R, you know, the robots do not exist that can handle the radiation level to go into those fuel ponds and dismantle them and get the debris out of there and then get the rods out. Apparently, they've been able to snatch a few of the rods with mechanical linkages. But as far as actual like robots to really do the work, that's an R&D program. They were talking 3 to 5 years just to develop the machinery to go in there and do that, and then another 5 years to actually complete the dismantling. So in my mind, it's like, what's the chances that these fuel ponds will not, A, fall over in another seismic event, or B, you know, have some kind of burn-through event where they burn through the bottom of the pond and lose water and start burning. So what happens is these fuel rods are encased in a metal called zirconium, because plain old steel can't handle the high level of radiation. It turns brittle and it falls apart and it cracks and it breaks. So zirconium is a special metal that, you know, you and I never heard of before I talked to Arne Gunderson. And zirconium is very radiation resistant. Unfortunately, zirconium burns like magnesium when it gets superheated. So it burns like a big giant Roman candle. So when one of these fuel rods is in the atmosphere and gets too hot, then it burns like a Roman candle, and you start having Chernobyl-like burning where you have radioactive fuel rods burning just like Chernobyl. It wasn't fuel rods, but it was a similar case where the radioactive stuff got so hot that it started burning in a radioactive fire. Now, a spent fuel pond will boil dry in somewhere between something like 3 days if it's got really hot cores in it that have just been freshly unloaded to, say, 28 days a month if it's got like old cores, like it's been a year or so since the last core got loaded into it, or a couple of years, then they're not as nearly as hot radioactively and thermally as freshly unloaded cores. So what happens is if you don't keep cooling the water in the ponds, it heats up to boiling, like a boiling pot in your stove. And if you don't, like, you know, keep filling it with cool water, then that pot will eventually boil dry. And when it boils dry, then those fuel rods start building up heat amongst each other, and then they start burning like radioactive Roman candles, and you have a Chernobyl-like situation. See, most of the radiation so far from Fukushima, well over 90%, has gone into the oceans. Whereas in Chernobyl, 100% of the radiation released, or well over 90% of the radiation released, went into the atmosphere. And short term, it killed a few hundred people who were basically the Chernobyl 200 who were giving their lives to encase it in concrete and earth, called the sarcophagus, so that the rest of the northern hemisphere wouldn't be, you know, polluted, especially the local areas, beyond ever repair. And then long term, maybe 10,000 died officially in the shorter period, but the epistemological study indicates that 1 million people died worldwide from Chernobyl, and 3 million were sickened. And that's an awful lot of people, and that's just one Chernobyl. So over in Fukushima, it's been estimated officially a half as much radiation as Chernobyl, unofficially more like 2.5, 3, I've heard maybe even as high as 5, but I think it's probably like 2.5 times as much as Chernobyl, but well over 90% of that went into the oceans, so not as much into the air. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying we're not seeing it as human beings out in the upper atmosphere because most of it went into the water. But if you have a burn-up fuel pond situation where the fuel ponds boil dry and start burning like Roman candles, then it's extremely serious. Now, Arne Gundersen and Helen Caldicott, when they talked about the possibility of these fuel ponds, you know, losing their water and boiling dry and burning, said, well, they'd buy a one-way ticket to the southern hemisphere right away. Now, personally, I feel that Japan has no choice, that they'll probably have hundreds of nuclear workers who've already volunteered for suicide mission, and they'll do the same thing as they did in Russia, where they'll basically, you know, knock down those buildings probably with explosives and then encase them in concrete and earth and bury them to do what they did in Russia. I don't think they'll have any other choice. But what it brings up is the incredible danger that the rest of the world has, because we have spent fuel ponds all over the world. Pretty much almost all of those 440 nuclear power plants in the world have spent fuel ponds. There's 104 nuclear power plants in the United States, and there's over 90 spent fuel ponds. And in the United States, we have an average of 15 Chernobyls worth of material in each spent fuel pond. We have more than in Japan. See, in Japan, they spent the money on dry fuel casks. See, after 3 to 5 years, these rods have lost enough heat and radioactivity that they can be loaded into special, extremely expensive, like millions of dollars each, dry casks, where they can be stored indefinitely in the atmosphere. And the dry casks are designed to have maintained proper heat transfer, that the rods will not overheat. So they've got to space them properly, and they have, you know, fins to transfer heat to the atmosphere. And so that without any cooling fans and without any cooling water and, you know, nobody maintaining them, they can just sit there for, I don't know, thousands of years, whatever, and not going to go anywhere. So they had a whole bunch of dry casks on site at Fukushima, and none of them failed. But they also have, I think, 6 spent fuel ponds at Fukushima with an average of about, I think they have roughly 50 Chernobyls worth in all of those spent fuel ponds. And 2 of the spent fuel ponds, number 3 and 4, are on buildings that have been seriously compromised by multiple explosions. And if you go to washingtonsblog.com, that's like George Washington with an S, blog.com, and you Google Washington's blog spent fuel ponds, there's a visual tour of the spent fuel ponds, and it's very discouraging, but it's better to know what these things look like than pretend that, like the media, that, oh, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for that explanation. We will be right back after this break, and we will be coming back at the top of the hour taking questions. Thank you.
to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyite removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyite is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyite LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. Bushu comes in three models, a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about Blue Shield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Blue Shield banner. Blue Shield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they used to beat you over the head with all day long, where they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all, at all, at all. Yeah, you know. And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant, because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract.
My name is Stan, and I'm 68 years old, and I live in Vermont. In the spring of 2003, I started to have problems with my heart. It felt like my heart was pounding, made me feel breathless. I tried many, many different things to try to get some help for myself. Nothing did anything.
Heart and Body Extract is very powerful, very effective, and works quickly.
I saw one of Sharon's ads and ordered Heart and Body Extract. I noticed a difference quickly, within days. The episodes became less frequent, and by a month, I completely vanished.
Usually, you find a 30-day or 60-day guarantee. Heart and Body Extract comes with a lifetime 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
No rules.
No rules.
No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.
Power of the ancient lord.
Okay, this is Mary Cassidy.
Believe the Dragonborn comes.
Project Camelot, Whistleblower Radio, and we're talking to Matthew Stein. Matthew, just before the break, we were talking again about Fukushima and the scenario, actually, of the 400 Chernobyls. You were talking about, well, I think you were about to get into the United States and the various nuclear power plants here and the state of affairs to some degree. Isn't that right? Or, you know, we
yeah,
were sort of
correct.
Alluding to the other earth changes that could affect them, et cetera. What we ought to do is also talk about your book specifically, because in I know we're sort of laying the groundwork, but I don't want to spend too much longer on this subject other than the fact that we've set the stage to what may be something that we have to deal with in the future and actually right now in terms of Fukushima, if you consider what's even coming over to the West Coast and in our water, et cetera, et cetera. So do you want to talk about some of the things in the book, approaches, for example, you know, the step-by-step sort of things that you recommend in any emergency, et cetera? Do you want to go there?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Well, let's talk quickly about the scenario, about what to expect. And solar storm EMP, we'll talk about that a little bit. And then we'll go into, you know, how to prepare and how to deal with. And you know, emergency preparedness is kind of like car insurance. You know, you hope you never need it, just like you buy insurance for your car. And you hope that, you know, no one says, gee, I want to get in a head-on collision today because I'm insured. It's like, no, you hope you never need it. And if you never use it, then great. But if that day comes when you need it, then you thank God you have it. And that prepping and preparing for an unstable future is the same way. If things really... Even if it's falling apart just for a week or two, you're glad you're prepared. And if it ends up being months to years, then you're really glad you're prepared. And you know, some people say, well, I don't have much money. And, you know, it's like, well, if you don't have money, then develop your skill set. You know, develop your knowledge. Develop your ability to work with your hands. If you have money and maybe you're older and infirm, then use that money to develop the storage, you know, to store some... lots of food, to store lots of useful materials that can be useful when you can't go to the store and the pumps aren't working. So let's see let's just imagine the scenario now. Like, say you step out one night and you see the sky lit up blood red and orange and gold and green streaks like it was in 1921 and 1859, like you've never seen it before in your life. And you're just awestruck by this incredible light show, but then you notice that all the power is out. And you go out the next day, and the power's out, and the next day, and the next day. Well, 3 hours after the power's out, most of the cell phone relay stations lose their backup power. So your cell phone is dead, you know, shortly thereafter, 3 hours later on the average. 3 days after the power goes out, the central switching stations for the telephone company have lost their backup power. So if you happen to have some backup hardwired old-fashioned phones that you just plug into the phone lines, well, after 3 days, those won't work anymore. Immediately after the power goes out, naturally all the streetlights are out and the refrigerators start failing and, you know, the power goes out. The hospitals run out of power in about 3 days, backup emergency power. The network TV stations, they'll run out of backup powers and generators within, you know, a few hours to a few days. The sewage pumps stop pumping. So when you live in a big city, you know, when you poop and it goes down and you flush the toilet, it doesn't just magically find its way to somewhere in the world. It goes down to low spots and big giant sewage pumps that are run by the electric power grid. Keep that sewage flowing and keep it moving all the way to the sewage treatment plant where it's treated and then eventually, you know, dumped into the rivers or oceans or wherever after it's been treated and gone through all that process. Well, all that stuff stops working. The plant that purifies your water and pumps it and pressurizes it and puts it up in the water towers so it can be pressurized for the city, well, those all stop working right away. They're not gonna keep going on backup power at all. And in the old days, your natural gas had natural gas-powered pumps, booster pumps, that that kept the natural gas lines pressurized, that kept the natural gas flowing, whether there was an electric grid or not. Well, turns out that electric booster pumps are more efficient, more cost-effective than those old natural gas pumps. So in the most part, they've, quote, upgraded most of our natural gas booster pumps to electric. So as soon as the grid goes down, those stop working. So after people start bleeding off the natural gas for a while, then you lose pressure and your natural gas won't go anymore. So basically you see this cascading failure where day after day after day gets worse and worse and worse, just like they saw in Hurricane Katrina, where the infrastructure was slammed and gone, but it got worse and worse and worse over the next couple of weeks for most of the surrounding communities until eventually months later, you know, things started getting back to normal. But imagine now there's like 70 Katrinas happening all over the United States, and there is no, you know, National Guard coming to your help, because the National Guard needs the grid just as much as anybody else to keep the fuel pumping, and the fuel's not refining anymore, and it's not pumping anymore, and so there's this cascading collapse that gets worse and worse and worse. And when they did a first responder conference at a war college outside of Washington, D.C. about a year ago, these are like the top military guys and first responder guys in the nation, and when they were given this scenario of an EMP or an extreme solar storm, and the EMP is more damage in a smaller area. I mean, the plus about an EMP is that the rest of the country and the rest of the world is still there and functioning to come to the rescue. The downside to the EMP is a lot more electrical stuff is fried than fries in a solar storm. Solar storm mostly just fries the grid, leaving most of the rest of our cool stuff alone and still working. But unfortunately, without the grid, the infrastructure collapses, and you know, yeah, your car is still running. You just can't get any gasoline pumped to get in your car. And you know, and all these other things are still working so long as they have electricity, but none of them have electricity, and all those things get cascading failure. So this is the one scenario you're looking at, and a little different for EMP. Like EMP is, like I said, more severe damage in a more localized area, but at least the rest of the world is there. And in a solar storm, the central tropical latitudes will be far less affected, because think about it, like if you have a pole of a magnet and you dip it into some sand, you get iron filings stick to the north and south pole, and the north and south pole cancel each other out around the center, so none of that iron filings will stick to the center of a magnet. So similarly, when the charged particles from the sun interact with the atmosphere, or a nuclear bomb interacts with the atmosphere with its gamma rays and charged particles, then the effect is far worse as you get closer towards the poles than it is towards the center in the equator. So in a super solar storm, extreme event, you're looking at India and Malaysia and Singapore, you know, trying to kind of put the rest of the world back together again after the rest of the world has had major cascading infrastructure collapse and grid collapse. Okay, so what do you do? Well, back in 1997, when this vision had dumped into my head, I was shown myself being dropped in the Amazon River Basin. This is like metaphorical, in that I realized that even though I grew up in the backcountry hunting and fishing and was an extreme backcountry kind of guy, you know, rock climbing and mountaineering and extreme skiing, all that stuff, and sleeping out in 20 below zero in snow caves and in a tent and, you know, all that stuff, and having an MIT degree and having cast, you know, done things like pit-fired pottery and cast metal the old-fashioned way and, you know, machined metal myself and done all kinds of things that most people have never done. If I was dropped in the Amazon River Basin with just the clothes on my back, I wouldn't be able to duplicate a damn thing from our modern world, or almost nothing. And I might not even survive. And that was a big shock to me. That was quite the rude awakening. So a big part of when technology fails is it's kind of divided. Like, how do you, what cool stuff should you have while the world is still working well so that you can be prepared to deal with stuff and cope with things? And on the other hand, if all the cool stuff went away or wore out, which it will eventually do in the event of a total collapse of modern civilization, how could I replicate the technologies, say the 1800s kind of technologies, It's like I'd much rather go back to 1800s-style technologies than, say, the caveman days and Mad Max days. You know, Mad Max kind of, you know, survival of the fittest, and if I don't kill them, then they'll kill me, that sort of thing. I'd much rather fall back to sort of 18th-century technologies, kind of like that TV show Revolution. So part of when technology fails is, you know, how do you make cheese? How do you tan leather? How do you make soap? How can I make candles from scratch? How can I make a backyard foundry so that I could, like, scavenge some 50-gallon steel drums and, you know, make some coal or use charcoal if I had to? How can I make charcoal? And build a foundry so that I could do sandcasting the old-fashioned way, make some horseshoes or make whatever I need to do to, you know, to make some modest things, make a plow, make an axe, you know, things like that. Melt down
the old. But Jim, at this moment, because that's a little further down the line in terms of survival.
That's much further down the line.
Yeah. What I'd like to do is back up a little bit and talk. First of all, I do want to take questions and callers. So I don't know if we've got anybody who wants to call in, but American Freedom Radio is the radio station we're on. And if you want to call in, if you go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the phone number is there, and you're welcome to call in. The other alternative is to type into the chat a question. And I think I have a few questions here that I'm going to look over and see if there's anything we can really sort of leap on at the moment. But what I'd like you to sort of focus on is, because I found it very interesting in the interview when you started to talk about, because many people live in cities, and many of those cities are actually on the coast. And so what we're looking at is sort of an emergency situation, and then advice to people on how to deal with that, because they're in a sense, as you sort of have said, and I don't know if we've covered it here, but in terms of automobiles not working, that sort of thing. So then they can't escape from a city. Some people will be stuck in the city. They will need advice on how to even sort of homestead in their own city, so to speak.
Right.
And so on. So can you address that sort of those aspects?
Sure. Well, certainly, you know, you got to start somewhere. And so everybody should start with a 72-hour grab-and-run kit, call it a go bag, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it's a basic kit that you and your family provides the basics of food, shelter, clothing, and first aid for a minimum of 3 days. And you have to think about water. I mean, water is a really big thing. You've got a city, say, in Los Angeles, what? You got 12, 15 million people in the Los Angeles area. You know, where are you going to drink your water? I mean, everyone's going to be drinking out of ditches and duck ponds. In 1984, I climbed El Capitan for like the third time in Yosemite. I brought the standard 2 quarts of water per person per day. It turned out record-breaking heat. We ran out of water. We would have been thirsty after breakfast if we finished all our water off on day 3, and we made it last through half the day. But it was horrible. I mean, when I tried to answer a question from my climbing partner, he'd ask me a question, and I'd try to answer, and the tongue would stick to the roof of my mouth like super glue, and I'd start gagging and retching. And we climbed through the night with our headlamps on and found the nearest mud puddle and stuck our faces in it and drunk. And believe me, if you were thirsty like I was, you will not be able to stop yourself from drinking the most scummy, disgusting ditch or duck pond water. If that's all you had to drink, you will not be able to stop yourself from drinking it. So you need to think about how do I prepare for that situation? So obviously, you know, water is really, really important. I mean, you know, you can live for a month, most of us, without food. But 3 days without water, if it's hot and you have to be modestly active, and people start dying. And in some places like the Sonoran Desert, in an afternoon without water and shelter, you could be dead. So it's a really big thing. So I suggest people have a backcountry water filter in their kit, like a K-9 or MSR. Those are kind of the standard de facto filters in the backcountry. And there's, you know, if you go to your REI and Cabela's, there's a lot of different options, and many of them are very good. but pick something that's field serviceable. You don't want a pleated membrane filter where it works great, and then when it plugs up, you throw out that filter cartridge and pop a new one in when, you know, you can't just go to the store. And so, and especially if you're doing it, drinking out of these scummy waters, then you're going to plug these filters up. So you want something like K-Diner MSR and the Berkey's to some extent, where you can pull it out and you can scrub it with a little green scrubby and take the outer layer of the ceramic cartridge off, and then it's back, you're back in business, and it's not toast and it's not over. Now, people may say, well, you know, what if I don't have a filter? Well, if you boil water, it'll kill all the bugs in the water, but long before you reach the boiling point, the bugs are dead, or, you know, certainly deactivated, if not totally dead. Pasteurizing water happens at 135 degrees Fahrenheit. Boiling is 212. Even at super high altitude, it boils at like 190 degrees. So it's by the time you hit boiling, you've knocked out any biological organisms except for prions, which are mad cow disease, and they're kind of weird proteins. And, you know, generally you don't have to worry about them unless you know that you're eating brains from some weird dead animal. Anyway.
Well, what about the idea of fluoride? Is fluoride still in the water after you boil it?
Fluoride will be in the water after you boil it, but if you have like an MSR or K-Dine filter, then the carbon cartridge will suck up fluorides and chlorines for a certain period of time. You know, they're not perfect on it, but they'll take a lot of that out. But in a crisis situation, I'm really not as worried about fluoride as I would be, you know, drinking it every day. It's like, you know, fluoride's kind of the least of my concerns in a crisis situation. But the carbon core in MSR and K-Dine and the carbon composite in the Berkey filters will suck up a lot of nasty chemicals and bad tastes and odors. So it's a very helpful component of a cartridge to have that. But typically, you know, you might still have your ceramic cartridge will probably get the bacteria and bugs out long after the carbon has stopped.
Okay, we're going to go to a break now. We'll be right back, and we're going to take the caller. So, caller, hold on. We'll get right to you as soon as we come back.
On a daily basis? Do you struggle to complete tasks, feel nervous in social settings, or are you losing sleep because of anxiety, worry, or health concerns? Let me tell you about a breakthrough discovery that changed my life. My name is Kirsten, and anxiety plagued me daily. I listened to the wonderful testimonials about RNA drops and decided to use them myself, beginning gradually from just a few drops to the recommended dosage. I'm happy to report that I experienced a significant decrease of anxiety, and that was just the beginning. After you hear the incredible stories at GetMyRNA.com, you can get a free trial-sized bottle valued at $50. Just pay shipping and handling. Again, that's GetMyRNA.com for your free trial-sized bottle today. Nothing is as important as feeling good again. Supplies are limited, so visit GetMyRNA.com right now.
Or see our ad on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. RNA drops.
What would you do if you or someone that you love was faced with a life-threatening illness? My name is Matthew David Hurtado, co-host of Transcension Radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. In 2008, I lost everything because of chronic illness, my home, a bankruptcy, even my marriage. A miracle happened in 2009. I discovered ION, and I was introduced to the RNA drops. Within a few short months, the nightmare of chronic fatigue, Lyme's disease, and PTSD was a faded memory. Today, people all over the world have reported incredible testimonials about their transcension process, and I invite you to listen and join us live on air every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Transcension airs live. You can listen to the archives or tell someone that you love, maybe even the person sitting in your chair right now, that science fiction has become virtual reality at Transcension Radio. Take your power back and join us every Saturday at Transcension Radio.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Online, all the time, your gateway to the world.
AFR
American Freedom Radio.
Give it to them.
Your daily dose of conspiracy and comedy is the Vinnie Eastwood Show. In a world so full of madness and chaos, don't lose your sense of humor or you'll go friggin' nuts. Weekdays 5 to 7 Central on American Freedom Radio.
Been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come.
Project Camelot,
here,
Whistleblower Radio, and we're talking to Matthew Stein, and we are about to take a call. Let's see if the caller is still there. Matthew, is that okay with you?
That's fine, sure.
Okay, great. So this is from, let's see, area code 863. You're on the air with Kerry Cassidy and Matthew Stein. Hello. Are you there anymore? Okay, I guess the caller is, maybe this was one of those people that call in to listen, so I'm just going to let them go. At any rate, we can go to the chat and see what is going on there as far as questions go as well.
Okay.
I'm going to kind of go backwards.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that I have a very complete list of recommended items for your go bag at whentechfails.com under articles. And, of course, it's in my books, When Disaster Strikes and When Tech Fails. Both books cover emergency prepping and survival in primitive conditions if you, you know, happen to be find yourself in those conditions someday. If you want, we could go over, as we did in the workshop, a few of the key items out of my go bag that are not necessarily in the average recommended go bag, but I feel are extremely important.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, one of these items is a colloidal silver generator. And I know, you know, in a crisis situation, chances that you're going to have good access to doctors and pharmaceuticals is pretty slim. And when you have millions of people going to the bathroom in all the creeks, you know, everywhere, because there's no sewage pumps flowing, then disease tends to break out. So a critical item in my go bag is my colloidal silver generator. And see, 2,000 years ago, Alexander the Great didn't know anything about germ theory, but he knew that if he stored water for his troops in wooden barrels or in skin bags that after a few days, something happened to the water and his troops started getting sick. And a soldier that's vomiting and has diarrhea on the battlefield, not a very effective soldier. But he also knew that if he stored water for his troops in silver urns, then they stayed healthy. And it turns out that tiny charged particles of silver have this almost magical property where they're toxic to all known pathogenic bacteria, but not toxic to human beings. And kind of magically, it sounds too good to be true, sort of like the tooth fairy, they also happen to not kill the good bacteria in your gut. Now, there's a scientific reason for that, that the good probiotic bacteria have an extra thick cellular wall that protects them from full-strength stomach acids. And that same extra thick cellular wall that protects them from those full-strength stomach acids also appears to protect them from colloidal silver penetration, which normally deactivates some pieces, you know, some of the chemistry in the bacteria, and they can't metabolize oxygen, so they basically kind of starve to death or suffocate to death. You know, they're not breathing, but they can't use the oxygen. So that's how it kills normal bacteria. So with a colloidal silver generator, for a few pennies a day, you need 3 9-volt batteries, or like a Soda instrument, you can use a single battery, or you can charge them off of solar cells. Then it'll make this tiny charged silver particle. Looks a little bit like smoke coming off of the silver electrode, and you can make a quart of that and drink that and heal yourself and put it on wounds and act as an antiseptic. Now, I know from experience, it's not as fast acting as a good antibiotic when the antibiotic is working well. But I also know from experience where my wife almost lost her kidneys due to an antibiotic-resistant kidney infection that laughed in the face of most antibiotics and was kept under control but never eliminated by Cipro, that after $2,000 and multiple treatments of Cipro, that it didn't eliminate the infection, and the silver did it. Oh, 3 days better. 3 days later, it was much better, and a week later, it was totally gone. And after 3 months of antibiotics off and on, weren't able to eliminate it. So, this could be a real lifesaver. So that's a key item in my bag, in my go bag. Another item that's important is my headlamp, and that's like a flashlight that sticks on the head. And today's modern headlamps are great. I mean, you can get a little, you know, black diamond, or you know, a whole bunch of different people make them, and 3 tiny AAA batteries and LED bulbs. They're super durable, they're waterproof, and they last a long time with just 3
tiny batteries. Okay, let me ask you something, Matt. Yeah. Is it possible to go on your website and just buy this stuff? Do you have it, like, for sale?
I don't sell it directly, but if you go to my website, When Tech Fails, then you'll see an article on the front page, not even listed under articles, just says Building the Ultimate Survival Kit. And
right.
If you scroll down that, and then it'll say read more, then it'll take you to links where you're able to buy, and I get a modest associate's fee off of it. It doesn't cost you anymore. It takes you to places like backcountry.com and REI, and you can purchase the stuff there, and or Soda Instruments to get your own colloidal silver generator. And, like, you get a 10% discount through the website going to Soda Instruments, a one-time 10% discount. And doesn't cost you any more. In fact, in that case, saves you money. So there's a lot of recommended stuff, really cool stuff in there, and it's a lot more than I can talk about in
okay.
6 minutes on the air.
And just in is it possible for people to carry this go bag on their back the way you packed it?
Yeah, see, what I have is I carry my stuff in, I have it in a blue tub, and in a backpack. And so some of the items, like I have an extensive first aid kit that goes in my blue tub, that if I'm able to stay in my home or evacuate in my car, the blue tub goes in the back of my car. If it's going on my back, I also have a small palm of the hand first aid kit that's nowhere near as extensive, but I can only carry so much on my back. So some of the big things, like my large Beijing hand crank radio that will receive shortwave and AM and FM, and you can crank it for a couple minutes and it runs for 15 minutes and it's high quality, not one of those cheap ones that you use it 4 or 5 times in its history. People listen to it for years and years in Africa where they got no batteries. That goes in my blue tub, but it's not going in my backpack because it's too big. So I like to have my stuff kind of divided between the small, compact backcountry items that go in the backpack and the bigger items that go in the blue tub. So depending on if I'm going by car or back. Now, certainly in a situation like an EMP, solar storm, something like that, or pandemic, then if you're evacuating by car, you want to make sure you have your backcountry gear. You want to make sure you have your inch and a half roll of cloth adhesive tape for so you can tape up sprains and tape up hot spots and blisters before they pop. Because if you know when you think about it, in a crisis, what do you see? You see pictures of people walking down the road. If it's not that big of a crisis, they're in their cars. When it's a big crisis, they're walking down the roads. And most of us, if you're not used to doing this a lot, what's going to happen? You're going to blister up a mile or two down the road. And once those blisters pop and you've got bloody, oozing sores in your heels, you're not going to go anywhere very fast, and you're going to be miserable. So before that happens, when you feel your feet getting a little sore in hot spots, whip those shoes and socks off. Take some of that inch-and-a-half cloth adhesive first aid tape, or, you know, it's athletic tape, off the roll and take the sticky part and scrub the scummy oils and dirt and sweat off of those areas you need to tape up and then throw that piece away and stick some fresh tape on there, put your shoes and socks on, and you're back in business. Extremely important piece of a very low-cost item to go in my go bag. So if I'm evacuating my car, I really need to count on the possibility, if it's a long-term event, that eventually I may well not have gas and need to abandon the car and move on foot. So, you know, be prepared for that. Now, obviously, if you're not physically able of moving on foot, then you're not, and you'll have to cope with that to the best of your ability. But, for instance, Gary Noe, out of New York City, when we talk about EMPs and solar storms, he suggests that people team up with partners, that they have meeting points, that they have a destination that's far away from the city and away from downwind areas of nuclear power plants. Like he's talking Texas, Austin area, but, you know, it depends on where you live and all that. And that you have, between your group, that you have a trailer packed with, you know, a 50-gallon drum of gasoline and a hand pump on it. And you have your supplies so that you meet with your partners and you collect your trailer and you get out of town before everybody else has figured out what's happening and you go towards your destination. But along with that trailer, he's got a folding bicycle and he's got backpacks. So if you have to, then abandon your car for one reason or another, then you do, and you can at least continue on bicycle or, worst case, on foot because of the possibility. See, 37% of all Americans live within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant. That's more than one out of every three because these nuclear power plants make huge amounts of energy. And when you transmit that amount of energy a long distance, you have transmission losses, and that's money down the toilet. That's just wasted money. So they build these power plants, not right in the cities, because that makes people nervous and they don't like to live right next to a power plant, but they build them close enough so that they don't throw all that money down the toilet by transmitting the power a long ways. So, you know, you have to look at a map, and you can easily Google it and see where those power plants and get an idea of what your local situation's like in the event of a long-term grid failure or short-term, in an EMP situation, you're probably going to have a large percentage of the power plants within the EMP zone going Fukushima-like because, you know, back in 1961, when the Soviets did their EMP test over Kazakhstan, they buried, they installed a whole bunch of backup diesel generators, the military did, because they assumed that the power grid would collapse in that area. So they had these backup diesel generators, and they were pre-microelectronics, supposedly far, far more robust to EMP than modern microelectronics is because the traces are so close in chips. The electrostatic effects of EMP tends to fry chips pretty badly. And yet these big military diesel generators, most of them failed in the EMP. And the EMP was so strong that it induced power in a trunk line that was buried 2 meters at 6 feet underground, 1,000 kilometer long, a 600 mile long power line that brought power to this remote part of Kazakhstan from a power plant 600 miles away. It induced so much energy in this buried line that it burned the power plant down 600 miles away. So that was a really far more severe effect than the physicists had predicted. And so you're looking at a situation where, you know, in a situation like that, I think our modern digital electronics in EMP tests, pretty much 100% failure of complex digital control systems, anything where there's a lot of digital electronics connected by lots of runs of wire that acts like an antenna to suck up this energy. So that means pretty much 100% of the systems that control our factories, our nuclear power plants, our pollution plants, et cetera, all in the internet, all that good stuff that makes our world run, pretty much 100% of those things fail. Now, your iPod, chances are good it'll be fine. It was turned off at the time and not plugged into a charger. And,
okay,
you know, even a lot of them might run. But,
okay,
but
so I want to slow you down just another minute
okay.
here. And thank you for all of that. That's great. Just because I have a couple questions here in the chat.
Sure.
And I just do want to get to the questions before we have to go off the air here.
Okay.
So there was one person who I'm sort of looking for the question again because I saw it and then I'm sort of losing it. Oh, okay. They were saying the circuitry inside generators and backup power sources being fried.
Right.
In one CME event, but then talking about working 3 days later, and so they were confused.
Well,
so,
CME events will usually not fry the smaller scale electronics, including your generators and including your digital stuff, in a CME event. Now, CME is from the sun. And think of the sun's blast as more like a long, slow burn that throws thousands of volts and amps down these 180,000 miles of extra high voltage power lines in the United States. And what that does is it causes, you know, anomalies and eddy currents in these massive transformers that have megawatts of power running through them. So all of a sudden they lose 20% of efficiency, and that's 20% of hundreds of megawatts is a lot of power, and it has to go somewhere, so it makes heat and it burns up the transformer. But it does not fry your personal electronics. Now, an EMP, a nuclear event, has three electrical events. An E1, which is like speed of light event, it's like sparky little things going on all over the place, frying a lot of digital electronics. An E2 is an event like lasts from a half a second to a couple seconds, and that's like 50,000 lightning bolts happening spread across all at the same half second time over those, you know, thousands of square miles covered by the EMP effect. And the E3 is more like a couple seconds to 20 minutes, and it's a long, slow burn of essentially the same intensity but a much smaller area as the coronal mass ejection, as the extreme geomagnetic event. And that takes down the grid, causing cascading collapse of the infrastructure over the affected area. So the EMP is quite different from the CME in terms of the effect on digital electronics and your ability to run a generator, say, and a backup generator, that kind of thing.
Okay, and thank you for that. Now, one question which I don't know if you've considered, actually, it occurs to me now, and I think are we having a break here? We're going to have to ask it after the break. This will be the last break, and we'll be right back with Matthew Stein.
Are chemtrail geoengineering programs changing our weather and destroying our environment? Why in the world are they spraying?
They want to create a storm in the southeast, then they'll start engineering out over the North Pacific. That's where the trailies will be.
Find out why critics are calling Why in the World Are They Spraying the most important film that is revolutionizing the environmental movement. Go to whyintheworldaretheyspraying.com for more information.
It's just going to get worse until the point where we're not going to be able to grow anything at all unless it's a Monsanto genetically modified abiotic stress resistant seed.
Why in the World Are They Spraying? New international version with languages available from around the world. Go to whyintheworldaretheyspraying.com for more information.
It's all about money, and weather is another form of commoditizing, the way the Central Command Group can commoditize another form of our life.
Why in the world are they spraying?
And if you control the weather, you're going to control the planet. It's that simple.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. BlueShield comes in three models: a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about BlueShield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the BlueShield banner. BlueShield, brought to you by the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The they shuffle around every 4 years. Doesn't mean anything. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around. I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on Election Day, I'm in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with.
My name is Sean David Morton, and in 2010, I was called into the offices of the most high-powered law firm in the world on an estate matter of the utmost importance. After signing contracts promising I'd never reveal the identity of the people involved, I inherited the journals of a man that had spent 40 years in and become director of the global shadow government. It was the Holy Grail with information on the Unified Field Theory, the Roswell crash, the Philadelphia Experiment, the Sigma Treaty, Nazi superscience, the Montauk Project, Area 51, the Dulce Mesa Wars, and treaties with extraterrestrial races and the back engineering of their hardware. But mostly, it had to do with the development of technology that would allow us to travel through time and fight a deadly alien threat that was only now on its way here to destroy our world. Read the book that I have risked my life to write. For the first time ever, read The Truth About It All. Sands of Time, the runaway bestseller by Sean David Morton, available in signed limited edition hardback only at StrangeUniverseRadio.com.
Read this book and never be the same. Warning. Warning.
American.
Warning.
American Freedom Radio
is habit forming.
American Freedom Radio
is habit forming.
Use the truth carefully.
Revolutionary discovery changes your DNA and restores perfect cells. Listen to Transcension every Saturday at 2 p.m. Central on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Say that joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, to drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth.
Project Hemlock. This is Laura Radio, and we are talking to Matthew Stein about when technology fails and when disaster strikes. Two books he's written, and we are actually getting close to the end of the show, but we're taking some questions here. My question right before the break, Matthew, was in terms of a CME or even an electromagnetic pulse event, have you discussed at all what kind of shelter to sort of use? In other words, we know that they have underground bases for such things.
Right.
But people that don't have their ticket to an underground base are obviously going to have to make do with whatever they can find. Have you ever put any thought into that and whether or not people should, go into underground you know, like let's say those parking lots that are sort of underground, or you know, overpasses or things like that. Is there any value to anything like that?
Well, there's a huge value in the event of an actual nuclear detonation. Because, see, the radiation from a detonation is quite different from the radiation of a Fukushima or a Chernobyl. See, when a nuclear power plant melts down, you have a cumulative effect where the radiation gets worse day by day by day by day, and its effect on you is worse day by day. Whereas when you have an actual nuclear detonation, like, you know, somebody blew off a bomb upwind from you, then the vast majority of that radiation from a bomb is short-term, highly radioactive stuff that decays extremely fast. So in 24 hours after a nuclear detonation, the radiation has lost like 90-plus percent of its radioactivity. And in 2 days, it's down to 90, it's less than 1% of what the radiation was right off the bat. So in the event of an actual, like, detonation, somebody got their whole hands on a bomb and detonated it, and then going into an underground structure like a parking garage, something with lots of cement and steel and earth or water between you and any surface where fallout can settle, makes a huge difference in your ability to survive.
And okay, but what about a CME?
Well, if it's, now again, if this is a CME, like a super duper CME that's been seen by someone doing remote viewing, like Ed Dames, then that's far beyond like an 1859 Carrington event, which didn't affect human beings in any way, shape, or form. Then, you know, it may be that you have to get underground. I mean, I just don't know that. That's not my area of expertise, but that's like a CME, like, far beyond just the electromagnetic event. That's where, like, stuff's coming right in the atmosphere and things are burning up and you got to get underground. So perhaps that's been seen and forecasted by the remote viewers, but it's statistically, it's not a very high statistical chance of happening. Whereas the CMEs that take the grid totally collapsed, there's a 12% chance that that'll happen within the next 10 years. That's like a 1 in 8 chance. And I don't know about you, but if someone told me I had a 1 in 8 chance of boarding an airplane and it would crash, I'd be pretty reluctant to get on that plane. Like, I wouldn't do it. You know, it'd be like, no way in hell I'm going to get on that plane. And that's what they're telling us we have in the next 10 years, is that 1 in 8 chance. But realistically, if you look at it and say, well, it's been 90 years since the last extreme geomagnetic event, 60 years before that, well, I'd say we're either due or overdue. And so it's just kind of a crack shot, like, when it's going to happen. Now, one thing that I mentioned in our workshop but didn't mention now is that they have a $1 billion fix to protect our grid from critical grid collapse in the event of either an EMP-type attack or an extreme geomagnetic event. Now, not the geomagnetic event like where you look up and there's you know, actual flares of sun stuff coming down to the surface of the Earth. I mean, that's far beyond the Carrington event, and I don't really know the physics of that and what it would do. But that's an event. This is an event that I'm talking about, like statistically a very good chance it'll happen within our lifetimes, unless we die an early death from some other cause.
Okay.
We're probably going to see it.
So we have a caller from,
yes,
310 area code. So let's see if we can take their call before the end of the show here. Area code 310, you're on the air.
Hi, Carrie. My name's Ross, and first I'd like to preface what I'm saying, what I'm going to say, that many think, and I'm one of them, that the large, what we call great pyramids around the planet are some kind of power grid system, and they're all connected mathematically, geometrically. And relatively to the size of the Earth, they are very small. If indeed they were some type of power generation system, being relatively small compared to the planet Earth, they can generate quite a bit of influence on this planet. And suppose that pyramids could do the same thing and heal Mother Earth at the Fukushima area, as well as other places like the Iraq bombed out area with uranium depleted uranium, DU, that the hijacked U.S. military has done on Iraq, as well as Fukushima. But the main comment I'm talking about is Fukushima at this point. I have such a pyramid, and all we need is about 12 of them. 24 would see miraculous results in the Fukushima area. 12 Pervyansk pyramids, and please, everybody, go and look at pervyanskpyramid.net. And I urge you all to spread the word about this and tell everyone that this is a possible solution for all of humanity here on this planet.
All right.
It's pervyanskpyramid.net. And we have had great success here in Los Angeles. I'm here in L.A., and I have just one small pyramid on that I travel around 5 or 6 miles in the morning every day, and we have had no dying bees, unnaturally dying bees, with that colony collapse disorder here as well.
There are 10 minutes remaining in this conference.
As well as no, I'm about ready to finish, no chemtrails since May.
No problem.
Virtually here in L.A., all the way for 70-mile radius, just from my one small pyramid.
Okay, why don't you send me this information on an email, and I'll see if I can get it up on my site for you, all right? And,
okay.
And we'll do it that way. I appreciate the call. I'm guessing you don't have any specific question for Matt?
No, I just offer solutions, and it's amazing. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, that's still legitimate and sounds like it has potential. So we'll investigate that. And like I say, caller, be sure to send me your information, and maybe we can put it out there on my blog and get you some notice in that area. Matt, while we have the next few moments, it's less than 10 minutes, actually. It looks like 10 minutes, but it's not. Can we kind of quickly cover whatever areas that you think maybe should be spoken about here to sort of round this discussion off?
Okay.
And I know that we've got other questions in the chat, and I want to apologize to everyone. We're not going to get to them, but if we get a chance, I will try to take one or two more. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, one important thing to think of that's proven science is materials like modafinilin, which is basically a dried juice kelp that helps bond to heavy metals and take them out of the body, chelate them out of the body. And they developed it in the Soviet Union. The particular one I take is modafinilin, M-O-D-I-F-I-L-A-N. And you can read about it at modafinilin.com. But they're not the only ones. But I highly recommend, with the radiation coming from Fukushima and the potential downstream, that people stock up and start using some of these natural materials. Charcoal is another one, but you know, something that will chelate and bond to heavy metals and dump radioactive materials, plus things like leads and arsenics and mercuries out of the body. Good stuff to have. Where would you like to go? I know we don't have a whole lot of time left. I'd say the big thing is you start somewhere and start developing your self-reliance skills, start developing a network, start thinking about out of the box, like, How do I get ready for a variety of scenarios? No one can plan for and do everything, but you've got to start somewhere, and certainly storing some extra food. You know, we live in you carry in L.A., there's wildfires, there's earthquakes. It may not be a solar storm. It may just simply be 600 freeway interchanges fall down the next time instead of six like the Northridge quake. And think of what that would do to L.A. Basin, and how would you get around, and How would you get your water when all the pipes are broken and there's 600 freeways down? How do they start fixing that?
Okay, yes, absolutely. There are all kinds of things. And actually, you know, the number of things happening around the planet, I don't think you've addressed meteor showers, but that's also a possibility in the near future, I have to say. So that's something to take in consideration. So there's just a multiple things. Certainly volcanism is going to be an issue. Have you put any thought into, for example, advising people on the best escape routes? Oh, well, it's too late.
Well,
we've got the music in the background during a volcanic eruption type of thing. Some cities are near those volcanoes.
Well, you have to just do... I'll leave you with my motto, and that's I ask everyone to do their best to change the world, and I also ask everyone to do their best to be ready for the changes in the world. And there's an inner compass. Your intuition, your spiritual guidance, whatever you call it, it's built into the spiritual DNA of all of us and can help guide all of us to make critical decisions. And the decision I need to make will be different from the one you need to make and from the one as somebody else needs to make. But try to get in touch with that inner compass to guide you in your path of preparing for the changes that are coming in our world today.
Thank you, Matthew Stein. I would like to do this again sometime in the near future. People cannot...
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyite removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyite is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyite LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
What would you do if you or someone that you love was faced with a life-threatening illness? My name is Matthew David Hurtado, co-host of Transcension Radio on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. In 2008, I lost everything because of chronic illness, my home, a bankruptcy, even my marriage. A miracle happened in 2009. I discovered ION and I was introduced to the RNA drops. Within a few short months, the nightmare of chronic fatigue, Lyme disease, and PTSD was a faded memory. Today, people all over the world have reported incredible testimonials about their transcension process, and I invite you to listen and join us live on air every Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Transcension airs live. You can listen to the archives or tell someone that you love, maybe even the person sitting in your chair right now, that science fiction has become virtual reality at Transcension Radio. Take your power back and join us every Saturday at Transcension Radio.
Just look at us. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. Doctors destroy health, lawyers destroy justice, universities destroy knowledge, governments destroy freedom, the major media destroys information, and religions destroy spirituality. I think there's more to know here.
What do we hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything they can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract.
My name is Stan, and I'm 68 years old, and I live in Vermont. In the spring of 2003, I started to have problems with my heart. It felt like my heart was pounding, made me feel breathless. I tried many, many different things to try to get some help for myself. Nothing did anything.
Heart and Body Extract is very powerful, very effective, and works quickly.
I saw one of Sharon's ads and ordered Heart and Body Extract. I noticed a difference quickly, within days. The episodes became less frequent, and by a month, I completely vanished.
Usually, you find a 30-day or 60-day guarantee. Heart and Body Extract comes with a lifetime 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. Call 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio. Now.